Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Thank you, Don McTee.
Here's John Williams.
This is John Williams. You can hear me weekdays 1 to 3. Hey, it's then. It's now. We're doing it. We're on the air. And then I'm also on Saturdays, which is hard to believe. That's 10 a.m. until 12 noon on social media. It's WGN King John. On the one and the two. Don't forget the Mincing Rascals podcast, which you can hear anytime on demand. The Mincing Rascals. Subscribe to that for free wherever you listen to finer podcasts. We post it on my Facebook page, too. Remember, I'm WGN King John on social media. Nice to hear Don McTee sitting in the newsroom. We work together on that Saturday show with Griffin and with Joe. It's a fun little program. Although, Dome, I don't know if you sounded off much. I don't know if you've got time to talk to me here for just a second.
Let's go for it.
Well, I'll talk about the Caves story. I want to talk about student debt that you may have. We'll talk about what happened with animal control in Chicago. It's a fascinating story and a controversial one, too. So lots of ground to cover. We could not pull ourselves away from the TV set this weekend. Actually, we did. We could. What we would do, though, was constantly check online, check Twitter, click over to CNN, and if there was any news about the kids in the cave, the soccer players from Thailand, then we would kind of focus in on that. How many kids are out? Two, now four, now five. What? Why aren't they getting more? What's happening? Where's the rain?
That story captivated me for some time. And so sad. I'm not hearing many reports about exactly what happened, but I don't know if you've heard of the diver who, in trying to save some of these kids Sunday, passed away.
He was the first, and he, as I understand it, died before any of the kids were rescued.
Yes.
So it made it sound, you know, even as perilous as it possibly could. If a trained Navy SEAL diver can't do it, then how are these little boys going to do it? And now, one by one, two by two, it sounds like they're getting out. There's still five people left in the cave, and we'll keep you posted. I saw a picture today of the tube that Elon Musk is sending to Thailand. Have you seen that? It looks like a torpedo. It's an escape module. A small person can fit into it. Air goes in it. It's sealed tight, but you're put in a canister, and there's air inside, and then they would drag you through the water and along the way. They showed them demonstrating it in a swimming pool, and they said it was small enough to fit through the passages. Will that get there in time? He said earlier today, it'll take 17 hours to get there. And I saw a report that showed the rain forecast. And the rain forecast for Thailand, Saturday, Sunday, here we are now, Monday, Tuesday, was several inches a day. I saw reports, though, where some of the reporters were standing there and it wasn't raining at the time. It seems as though the rain has been holding off. So keep your fingers crossed and we'll keep you posted on how that story develops. What a story.
My God.
And then the other thing that you and I talked about over the weekend, and you didn't chime in much on, Don McTee, was the story about that thread on the internet. It was on Twitter and on Instagram of the couple on the airplane. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so let me just see if I have this right. And Violetta, you may have an opinion on this too. A woman and her boyfriend get on an airplane. They don't have seats together. The woman approaches somebody else and says, hey, will you switch seats with us so that my boyfriend and I can sit together? And they say, okay. She then turns to her boyfriend. I think it's a boyfriend, not a husband, but the person she was now sitting with. And she said, isn't that great? I hope this man and woman that are now going to sit in one of them in my seat. She said, I hope that they find the love of their lives. I hope that they have a nice trip. And then they all sit down and she and her boyfriend are sitting behind this randomly selected couple in front of them. And then she starts to tweet out or insta out all sorts of pictures of how it's going. And it was sort of like a real-time play-by-play. Oh my God, they just touched elbows. She can see in the crack of the seat in front of her. And now they're chatting. And now they're sharing, you know, screen grabs on their phone and talking about their moms. Isn't this terrific? And people were really getting into it. And sometimes she would post pictures of them from angles. But she would black out their faces so you couldn't see exactly who they are. When she noticed that each of their fingers did not have a ring, she got very excited. People were taking lunch breaks and coordinating their day around the sort of live stream of this budding relationship. And I just thought it was so much fun. Producer Griffin and Joe, who does sports for us on Saturday, they weren't there for me, were they, Domitique?
Not at all.
I don't get it.
Well, isn't it nice that this randomly selected couple seemed to have a little budding romance? They were flirting, and it was fun.
Yeah, but that girl is so annoying, and her boyfriend, she wanted to sit next to her boyfriend so she can tweet out these pictures of another couple.
Well, that's not why she did it, but that's what happened. I mean,
well, I hope she
it was a plot
trouble.
Twist. It was a turn. It was love. It's a reality, live reality show of love
those
happening.
Those people are probably married also.
That was the concern of some people. It's like, well, what if they're married? But she was trying to block their identity. Griffin felt that it was once again evidence that there's no such thing as privacy in the world anymore. And that there you are trying to do this lady a favor. And now she's concocting this narrative for the whole world to see
right.
about you. And
well, that's the thing. It's a narrative. You don't know. I mean, you've been nice to someone next to you in an airplane because you have to sit there with them for 3 or 4 hours.
No, Violetta, it is. I mean, I don't think she was making things up.
It's interpreted a certain way. I mean, I've shared a screen grab with someone. It doesn't mean I went to dinner with them and gave them my phone number.
Did you touch elbows? Were you kind of leaning into each other? Were you both look like fitness trainers? Did you both order off of the same menu when you were sitting on the airplane?
I think it could be easily misconstrued or made into something, especially depending on the angle you get.
You can tell when people are flirting, Violetta. It's pretty obvious.
Did you see this thread?
Yeah.
And did you think they were flirting?
From the description, yeah.
And did you think it was adorable?
Yeah, of course. Come on. Romance and intrigue.
But would you want to be the couple that these pictures are happening about?
That is impossible to answer.
I mean,
would you? Maybe yes, maybe no. Would you? Me? Maybe yes, maybe no. But we sure don't know how they felt about it. I have not seen reporting on who they were and are they... Do they love their sort of anonymous celebrity status?
Yeah,
semi-anonymous, by the way, because I'm sure if you're married, you recognize those fingernails anywhere. You know, even though all you saw was an elbow, the hands touching.
What they were wearing, that we know where they were leaving and going to, what
you
airplane they were
on. You can piece it together,
so
yes.
People who know them probably, if you and I wanted to, we could probably figure out who they were, right? With crowdsourcing and stuff like that. We could probably figure out who they were. Now, if they're married or if they don't want to be attached to this other person for whatever reason, maybe they don't like it.
It's not even being attached to this person, but I don't want people taking pictures of me when I'm, you know, when I'm anywhere, let alone that I don't know they're taking the pictures and using them as this long thread to tell them a story that I don't want to tell.
That's Griffin's point. No privacy in the world. You're just sitting on an airplane. You get off and like 100,000 people have repurposed. I'm not exactly sure the platform she was using, but have shared this story. It was hundreds of thousands of people were getting into it, which is, Griff thought, kind of creepy and kind of bizarre. I'm still waiting for Domitique, though. No, you've said Dom. You're with
me. I think it's fast. I'm with you. It's fascinating.
You.
It's a love story. I think we can compromise a little privacy for a love story.
At no point in this story, as I told Griffin on Saturday, at no point in this story did somebody walk to a restaurant as people were chanting political slurs at them? You know? I mean, all of the stuff that's happening in social media, all of the politics of the day, all of the things that make us crazy. And here was just a spontaneous, silly flirt story. I won't even call it a love story, but a flirt story.
And for me, who watches more arguments than and yeah. news items on Twitter than love stories,
exactly.
It was refreshing. It was refreshing to see.
Here's where I thought it was going to go south. That it was going to turn out that we were all being duped, that it was a staged campaign by the cell service provider or by Delta Airlines or by Apple. You know, maybe it was an iPhone promotion gone, you know, not viral, but scheduled to go viral. They were tricking us. I haven't seen any reporting that it was that.
Don't take pictures of me when I'm anywhere.
Right. I get it. And you know what?
Violetta, I asked this guy at a park to move. His camera literally was I was like, what are you doing? I asked him. I'm like, what are you taking pictures of? And yes, we're in a public place, but I'm allowed to ask him not to take pictures.
He was taking pictures of you?
I don't know. He said he was taking it of the scenery.
And you were in the scene.
I suppose, but that
you didn't
lens
like that.
Was very big.
So you really, and so you said, hey, fella, I'd appreciate you not doing that.
Yeah, I walked up and I go, what are you taking pictures of?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, if someone was taking pictures of me on a flight, oh my goodness.
It's the paparazzi. You're Violetta Pajamedic.
No, it wasn't. It was not.
No, but I mean, that's another, listen, I think all of these are relevant points. I don't think I would like that either, Violetta. It does seem to be an invasion, right? Somebody pointing a camera or a phone at you.
Or like one picture, but like a thread just continuing to like either make this story up about me flirting with someone on a plane or whatever.
Well, I just got a tip from a listener, and she said she saw the guy in the couple or like the guy who was flirting with the woman.
Flirting back,
apparently,
yeah.
On some TV show, and he said it was nothing serious. Nothing came of it. But he could just be saying that. Maybe he fell in love with her and he doesn't want the world to know.
Well, none of this is my point if, in fact, it wasn't genuine. That is, if they weren't enjoying the flight and if they weren't flirting and if we couldn't hope and dream that something fun would come of it.
Do you have this somewhere? I need to see this for myself.
Oh, yeah, I'll show you the thread. But if you Google thread about two people flirting on a plane felt so good and so bad, I'm reading from Slate right now, you can find that. The woman who posted it is Rosie Blair at Rosie B. Me, R-O-S-E-Y-B-E-E-M-E. Rosie Blair is her name. Last night on a flight home, she wrote, my boyfriend and I asked a woman to switch seats with me so we could sit together. We made a joke that maybe her new seat partner would be the love of her life. And well, now I present you with this thread. So there's that. Supreme Court Justice nominee. We're going to find out who it is. I thought we were going to find out at 9 o'clock this morning the president would come out to some Rose Garden ceremony and he would announce the person and pat him or her on the back. They'd give a speech and then we'd wait for the Senate approval. But that's how other presidents do it. How this one is going to do it next. So the president's going to do it in prime time. Make no small plans, Donald Trump. It's not just enough to announce that you've picked a Supreme Court Justice nominee, but then you have to make, you know, that is in of itself grand. It's large. You cannot quietly do that. But he's going to jazz it up at 9 o'clock tonight. Eastern time or Central time? It's tonight. You'll be watching a show. It'll come on. And I'm just wondering what that would look like. I'm wondering what that would sound like.
Tonight, it's the Supreme Court Announcement Show. Legal Celebrity Apprentice meets Judicial Survivor meets Straight Eyes for the Queer Guys meets Oh Big Brother meets Conservative American Idol. We'll meet your host and Master of Ceremonies, Steak Endorsement King Donald Trump in just a minute. But first, let's meet our contestants. There's Brett Kavanaugh. He's 53, a Yalie, worked on Ken Starr's report, and doesn't love the idea of impeaching a sitting president. Amy Coney Barrett, Chicago's very own. She's 46 years old, the longtime Notre Dame law professor. There's Raymond Ketledge, a solid conservative and a Washington outsider. He likes to fish and hunt and wrote a book, Lead Yourself First, that focuses on solitude and meditation. And how about Thomas Hardiman? He drove a taxi to pay his way through college, first in his family to graduate from college, and Mitch McConnell likes his chances. Will it be one of them, or how about Omarosa? Let's not forget former governor of Illinois. He could have his sentence commuted. Who said he couldn't be a Supreme Court Justice, Rob Blagojevich? And where's Jared been lately? Who will be the next Legal Celebrity Apprentice? And now, here's the host of the show, President Donald Trump.
It's called the Space Force, which is very exciting. And people love it. People love it. They get it and they love it.
All right, so it'll be something like that. And they'll be waving. Maybe they'll be on separate little stages, all of the candidates. Maybe they'll be behind curtains and they'll throw open the curtains. How about this guy? Or maybe they'll just walk onto stage and wave, kind of like they do in pageants.
Well, you know what you really brought up there was the Blagojevich thing went away, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That looked like it was imminent.
I was asking...
Time to call Fox News, Patty.
We reached out to Patty Blagojevich a couple of times, asked her to come on here and make her case. She went on another radio station in town to ask the listeners to petition the president. And I told her in a message, I said, listen, I think your husband's in jail for too long, too. But she's kind of mad at us and doesn't want to come on. But if I were her, I would take any port in a storm, because the president's, you are not the shiny object right now. The attention's moved on. Steve, are you handicapping it? Do we know who's probably going to be the next Celebrity Apprentice?
I haven't really looked at it too much, to be honest with you.
I'm looking at these names, and they all look fine to me. In fact, that's the consolation to me. I'm like, all right, I'm nervous about everything Donald Trump does, but if at the end of the day he's got a bunch of Yale grads and a Michigan guy and a Notre Dame gal, and they're really smart and have been successful in the field of law, I'm not as conservative as they are, but...
It's not the guy who used to run a shoe shine shop at Trump Tower.
Right, so yeah. I mean, like, because he'll do that, too, with stuff. I mean, Trump sometimes makes decisions or says things that makes your head spin. But I think, in this case, he can't screw it up. The only thing that's making me unhappy is it's somebody who is going to skew the court for the rest of my life. I don't love that, but that's the way the game gets played. That's fair.
Well, not always.
But... Well, but I think as an American... You have an expectation, you have a reasonable expectation to have the president appoint someone who is competent. You don't get to have the rulings you want, but you need a person who can competently interpret the Constitution and the cases before them and weigh one against the other.
Are they qualified?
Yeah, right. And so
I agree with that.
And I mean, look at this. You got a 5-4 decision the other day. Well, so it doesn't make the four wrong. It means that they had a different opinion, and all you can ask for is an informed opinion. I mean, ultimately, that's the way it's supposed to be, and maybe they'll surprise you sometimes.
Right, and I know I keep singing the same song. That's the way it's supposed to be, and it wasn't last time.
Yeah.
And I don't think that changes the way anything should happen this time. I think if someone comes forward that's qualified, he or she deserves to be approved.
You don't want to do a Mitch McConnell stall test.
But what they did last time... And made stuff up about precedent was unprecedented and was damaging to the country.
So it's 9 o'clock. Do you know, Steve?
I'm sure you're seeing Eastern. I don't know.
So it'd be 8 o'clock our time. We'll find out on the Legal Celebrity Apprentice Show. Steve's got WGN Radio News. Oh, and let's talk after the break about student debt. Ray Kaplan comes on our show once in a while. Sometimes we even do commercials with her or for her. But there's a couple of things you should know if you or someone you know has student debt. How to minimize that, still to come. Lots of texts about the couple on the plane, Violetta, that we were talking about.
I went and looked it all up. You guys are ridiculous.
This texter says, I agree with Violetta. That was creepy. The next texter, John, this is such an invasion of privacy. You want to be filmed with the wife on one of your cruises because you're cute and sweet? It's awful. The next texter said, brilliant, John, thank you, but I don't know if it was about that thing. Wondering John's opinion about John Cass' column about the senators apologetically drilling the Supreme Court possible nominee Coney Barrett and her Catholicism. I didn't think that the drilling her about her Catholicism was off the charts. But
doesn't she belong to an unusual group, too?
I don't know
within
about
the
that.
Catholic Church. I thought there was a...
I know that she's an ardent Catholic, as is the vice president, as are a lot.
The vice president's Catholic?
He calls himself a evangelical Catholic.
Hmm.
Estimated probability of accuracy of that, 81%. Very high for me. But I'm going to have Elif look it up just to be sure.
You realize that I think it's 6 of the 9 justices are Catholic and the other 3 are Jewish?
I didn't think about that.
Now, my estimation
is
there
is, Catholic?
I'm going to go like with 57%. But
Clarence Thomas is a Catholic.
I believe I heard that last week, that there was, you know, and it used to be there was a time where there were none, and certainly there were very few Jewish. There used to be a quote-unquote Jewish seat. You know, when I think it was Justice Frankfurter would retire, there was pressure. There'd always be one Jew on the court. And times have changed so much now. It's predominantly Catholic and Jewish.
To me, everybody has a filter.
Which is funny. One other thing, because the evangelicals have so much sway and are so involved in this, there's not a Protestant member.
No kidding. Now that you mention it, yeah. I mean, you would think that if there was ever a window, this might be it. But evidently, it's not one of the main candidates. It seems to me like if you're a Latina, then you will see things through your life's experience. If you're a Catholic, you see things through your belief system. You have to take the Constitution before the church, but you have to take the Constitution before the church. And that will be her task if she gets it. They say that her interview with the president went poorly, and so she's now not in the top three or two candidates. We'll find out tonight on Celebrity Apprentice at 9 Eastern. Ray Kaplan's in our studio. She makes a return visit to the WGN Radio Studios, the owner of Kaplan Law Firm here in Chicago. Hey, Ray, welcome back. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So I have invited you onto the show on occasions where student loan debt, that's what we talk about when we talk about you, are on people's minds. Is this a particular time for people relative to that?
Well, it actually is. There was a recent change in the law where people who have all of their loans discharged through something called the TPD discharge or a total permanent disability discharge, that used to be a taxable event. As of 2018, if you get your student loans discharged through the total permanent disability discharge, that's no longer going to be something that you're going to be taxed on.
Taxable event, meaning if I have $50,000 in student debt and I get that discharged, what would be the tax consequences of that? You do or don't pay. You don't pay taxes on it, right?
It's been discharged. No, you don't. Exactly.
Previously, you would have,
yes. So you'd have a pretty big tax liability for
that. So even if the loan was forgiven, you'd still owe, say, 20% on $50,000.
Exactly, because the IRS would view that as income.
Yeah.
That you're receiving.
Well, it's funny, though. I mean, that doesn't seem to make sense. It would seem to me like if for some reason it's discharged because you've declared bankruptcy or the loan was somehow inappropriately applied, if the loan goes away, then it would seem to me the tax consequences would as well.
Right. But that's not the way it was up until 2018. So it doesn't apply if you received your discharge prior to 2018. But if you received your TPD discharge in 2018, then you're good.
Are we talking about parent plus loans here?
We could be.
Because but not those, right now. Yeah, okay.
Right.
But then tell me what a parent plus loan is.
So a parent plus loan, I would say the majority of my clients have at least $100,000 in parent plus loans. And the issue with those is that the servicer, these are federal loans, and they're loans that parents take out for the benefit of their children. Their children are not responsible for them. The parents are solely responsible for them, but they're federal loans. And the way the payment structure is set up, the Department of Ed wants you to be paid off on that loan in 10 years. So, of course, the payments are rather high. And what the servicers don't tell you is that you're also eligible, as long as they're federal loans and you haven't defaulted, then you're eligible for much, much lower repayment plans. We have payment plans reduced all the time from $1,500 a month to $200 to $300 a month, even less than that on occasion.
What's the average reduction you get?
80% in a monthly payment. And then that's not even taking into consideration the possibility of them, the parents, having a huge chunk of their loans actually discharged through something called either private sector loan forgiveness or public sector loan forgiveness.
Before you go to that, why would my loan be reduced 80% or 50%? If I have a contract, if there's a schedule, what would the basis be for me getting the payments reduced?
It's all under the Higher Education Act. And that's a great question because I have clients asking me that all the time who are a little incredulous that this is something you can actually do. And this is not affiliated with bankruptcy. These are just options that are available to everybody who has federal student loans according to the Higher Education Act statute, which governs all federal student loans.
What do they do? Divide it by 10 years, 12 months, and then say if that and the loan has to be retired in 120 payments?
Well, what they do is it's based on income. So it's an income-driven repayment plan, and there's a calculation where you submit documentation of your income, and then the calculus is based on what would be 10% of your disposable income based on a family of your size and in the state in which you live. And so on that basis, we also apply the same calculation as the Department of Ed, and we sign them up for the appropriate payment plan. Even our clients who have $0 monthly repayment plans, those payments count towards eventually getting the entire balance forgiven.
So if you've been diligent about not paying anything, mm-hmm. then and is that the target? Everybody's trying to go 10 years, 12 months, and then...
Well, that's the target. Else? Well, the Department of Ed would like you to pay off your loans, obviously, in 10 years, but you don't have to. That's just the one that they kind of push on everybody. But under the statute, there are all these other great payment plans available that can go 300 months, which are 25 years or so.
But when you said this is a federal program, right?
Right.
Okay, so who's lending you the money? Is it a bank or is it the federal government?
It's the federal government.
Federal government does.
Right.
And these Parent Plus loans.
Yes.
Do you recommend Parent Plus loans to people?
Yes, I do.
They should get them, maybe because they're low interest and also because you can minimize the payment schedule, right?
Right. And interest is set by Congress. So generally speaking, I mean, you don't have these very high interest rates like you find with private loans.
Is anybody eligible for a Parent Plus loan?
Pretty much anybody.
Problem is, I want to retire someday. This kid's got 50 years of earning ahead of him. I've got 10 years of earning ahead of me, or 20, maybe 30 if you're a parent, whatever. But you don't want to be solely responsible for that. And you're telling me that the parents are the ones responsible. This isn't co-signed with the kid, right?
It's not, no. But, you know, a lot of our clients who have Parent Plus loans, they have an arrangement with their kid where even though they're actually making the payment of a couple hundred dollars a month, their child is actually paying them back once they're gainfully employed. So that kind of thing we see all the time. It's just that in terms of who is actually legally responsible on the note, it's the parent, not the child.
Okay, the number's 312-981-7200. Call or text right now, 312-981-7200. I know you've got a question about this or a comment. Here's your chance to get Ray Kaplan to answer your question, 312-981-7200. You're getting several hundred dollars a month reduced from the obligation for these people on these loans. But we say in your commercials sometimes that you work with people to declare bankruptcy.
Yes, we do.
When I do this, am I declaring bankruptcy?
No.
If I'm getting the loan payment reduced,
no.
Is that because I've declared bankruptcy?
No, absolutely not. So it's a non-bankruptcy solution. If you come in and basically your problem is primarily student loans, but everything else is pretty much under control, this is a solution that's great because you don't have to file bankruptcy to get this. You can avail yourself of these payment plans just because you have federal student loans.
Well, do you see how I'm confused by this? Because if this is a federal program and they're the ones that have set the payment schedule, but then I apply through another federal program and get them reduced, it's the same federal government. Why didn't they tell me about that less expensive option at the beginning?
That's a great question. My only answer to that would be conjecture. And all I can think is that the Department of Education, in the interest of trying to get the loans paid off as soon as possible and in 10 years, their interest is getting the loans repaid. Their interest is not necessarily making your life as comfortable as possible. That's my job. My job is to make your payments and your life more comfortable.
So how much do people come in with student debt?
I would say right now, roughly 50% of our clientele are non-bankruptcy, only for student loan debt.
And how much are they coming in? How much debt do they have? Student debt.
It ranges from about $40,000 total to $200,000, $250,000.
What was the spectacular story that you and I were talking about off the air? I don't know the details on this.
Oh, well, yeah, this is an unusual situation, but most of the time, student loans are non-dischargeable in bankruptcy. So a bankruptcy is not going to help you if you have a big student loan problem most of the time, unless your loans fall into a very rare category. And this is actually, I'm talking right now about private loans as it relates to bankruptcy. But we are seeing a couple of instances, and we have one case in particular where a client went to a foreign medical school and obtained about $300,000 in private student loans. He also subsequently filed a Chapter 7. And because when he went to medical school, the school was not designated as a Title IV school under the Department of Education, meaning that they were not allowed to receive funds from the federal government at that time. The fact that he filed a Chapter 7 means that his loans are actually going to be wiped out in his Chapter 7. Very unusual.
They should not have taken the money to begin with. They were not eligible to get it.
The school was not eligible to receive federal funds, but they were eligible to receive private loans. And our client took out private loans and assumed that his student loans would not be able to be discharged in his 7, but actually they are going to be. That is an unusual instance, but it does happen.
How much did that family then save?
$300,000.
312-981-7200. All the phone lines are ringing. Imagine that. Student debt Your questions answered next on WGN. Ray Kaplan is here from the Kaplan Law Firm. We're talking about restructuring or retiring your student debt. Half of the time you said through bankruptcy, half of the time not.
Right.
What's the consequence if I declare bankruptcy, though? I don't want bankruptcy on my financial record.
It is a negative hit on your credit report, but I would say it's very different than how it used to be 10 or 20 years ago. Now it's just it's a blip on the screen, and you can pretty easily repair your credit after filing a bankruptcy.
Well, and maybe that's the lesser of the evils anyway. Maybe, all right, I don't want to have a bankruptcy charge on my record, but better that than...
Right. And sometimes it's necessary to reverse your debt-to-income ratio analysis, so it actually helps your credit in some ways because you're getting rid of the debt. So then when you're being analyzed by a potential creditor, they see you no longer have debt. They know you can't file a Chapter 7 for another 8 years, so you're actually a better credit risk because you've gotten rid of your debt.
This is Marianne. You're on WGN. Hi, Marianne. What can we do for you?
Hi. I would like to first of all thank Lisa Madigan and Dick Durbin for all the work they've been doing on this with the class action lawsuits of the students in the state of Illinois. But Ms. Kaplan, you made a very, very good comment about Congress sets the interest rate. And it was my understanding July 1st, they set it at 3.67. But yet there's so many people out there that say theirs is still at 9, 10, 11%. How does that happen? What can we do about that?
Unfortunately, there's not a lot we can do about that. But I see your point. And I think that the one thing that might provide some relief when, if you do have loans where you signed on for an interest rate that in retrospect was too high, oftentimes a consolidation is the way to go. You consolidate those loans, especially if they're federal loans. The consolidation rate right now is around 4.8%, I believe. It might be a little bit higher. But even so, that would also provide some relief.
It's an interesting question. Thanks for the call. By the way, you know, our friend David Hochberg says, go ahead and refi your house, particularly if you can get a lower rate than you have in your house, and then add this debt to that. And instead of, you know, paying 12%, shoot, mortgage rates now are 4%. You could get it that way.
The only reason, not if you have federal loans, I would not take them out of the federal sphere, because when you take a federal loan and you refinance it and make it into a private loan, you no longer have that flexibility that the federal statute provides, where if you retire and your income goes down, we can drastically reduce the payment that is due on your federal loans, where if you take it into, you create a refinance that makes it into a private loan, you can't do that.
Is that the trick, is to waiting to when your income goes down? If you're the parents, maybe I shouldn't do it right now, but I'm going to retire next year. My income will go down. It'll be easier for me to restructure this thing now.
Sometimes, but sometimes you don't have that luxury. You need to have some kind of a payment. And the nice thing about this is, even if we drastically reduce your payment and get you into a very, very low monthly repayment on your credit, it shows that you're current and up to date and in good standing. So it's actually really good for your credit.
Mary, you're on WGN. What's your question? Hi.
Yes. My son finished medical school with $140,000 debt because we kicked in $100,000. And the federal loans are 6 and 7%. What is this? I'm balking for him at the interest rate. What could I do? Would the Parent Plus be good for us?
I'm sorry. Has your son already graduated?
Yes, he finished.
Okay, so you're not going to qualify now for a Parent Plus loan, but as far as your son's loans are concerned, I would probably recommend a consolidation and then to get onto an income-driven repayment plan, and we can certainly help him with that. But chances are, if he's is he a resident right now?
Correct.
Yeah.
Where do you go for consolidation?
So you can do it directly through studentloans.gov. Mm-hmm. You can do a paper application, or you can do it online. It's actually fairly simple. You just want
to
make sure.
People come to you with that?
Yes.
How do I do this?
Absolutely. We handle all of that so that you don't have to worry about the paperwork. Yep.
Because what's terrible is, yes, he's not required to pay a lot because his salary is still like in the $50,000. That interest comes interest on the interest. It's
right.
It's terrible. I mean, the what he owes is just growing.
And that's what he owes. You said $140,000?
Yes.
And do you owe $100,000 or you paid
$100,000? We kicked in $100,000.
You had $100,000 to throw in.
Well, actually, when it comes to your son, though, I would not to. So just so that you can put it in a better perspective, it's actually not as bad as it seems, because even if he's probably going to end up working at a a hospital that's a not-for-profit, and so he'll qualify for public sector loan forgiveness after 120 payments in an income-based payment plan. So he'll get a huge chunk of all that interest that's been accruing knocked off. He'll get that forgiven.
Good luck. I'm going to give your phone number and email address here in a second,
Great.
Ray. But John, it says here, I already have a Parent PLUS loan, but I'm paying 7% interest. How can I reduce my payments?
I would say the way to go would likely be consolidation if he hasn't already consolidated.
But here's a Student PLUS loan, a Parent PLUS loan, it's 7%. So you've locked in at that rate?
We can consolidate those. Yep, and get a lower loan or lower rate.
What's your website?
It's www.financialrelief.com.
Financialrelief.com. She's in Chicago. Okay. Ray, lots of calls, lots of texts. We're out of time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Good luck to you all. When I get to be king, college won't be that expensive, and they won't loan you more money than you can pay back. I think it's a crime that, to some degree, I guess everybody's complicit in a little bit, right? The parent, the student. But I think it's criminal that schools knowingly allow students to borrow that much money. And ain't all of them going to be doctors either. I just think something sort of fundamentally has to change.
Maybe the price needs to come down.
I would take that too. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. It is, hold on a second. All right, ready? I'll have hit it. 3, 2, 1, go.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
That's what we do.
Here's John Williams.
Weekdays until 3. Afterwards, we think little thoughts. I'm also on Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. until 12 noon on social media. Find me as WGN King John. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals podcast. We record that on Thursdays. It's a roundtable of smart people. I get to listen to them, and you do too. The Mincing Rascals. Remember, too, that Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States, joins us on stage at the College of DuPage Saturday, August 18th. TJ and I will discuss current events and events from 200-plus years ago. What would you like to ask one of the founding fathers, and what would they want to say to you and me these days? That'll be at the College of DuPage, Saturday, August 18th. The tickets for that went on sale last week. Go to WGNradio.com/events. Go to WGNradio.com/events. You have never seen anything like this if you have not been to one of these shows. You will believe. Tribune story the other day began this way. The $130,000 a year executive director of Chicago's chronically troubled animal care and control shelter was fired for warehousing dogs in conditions that made dangerous dogs more dangerous, City Hall sources said last week. Sources said that Susan Russell's fate was sealed by her underlying philosophy that every dog, even those deemed dangerous, could be rehabilitated. So she's been relieved of her duties. She was out of country and has returned back to the Chicago area just, I believe, this weekend. And she joins us now with our own Steve Dale in studio. Welcome to both of you. How are you?
Thank you so much, John, for having me on.
Probably no fun enjoying a vacation when that's the story that you exit with, huh?
Well, you probably have that right, but there was a lot to enjoy in London as well.
What did you make of that first sentence? Is that there's the summary that people see? Is that what happened here?
Well, I want to be very clear. This was an explanation that I believe came out after a lot of uproar at my termination. And I think it is an absolutely inaccurate assessment of what we do at the city shelter. When I came on as the executive director in May of 2016, a big part of my goal, and I think it's the community's goal as well, was to save healthy and treatable animals as far as their resources and capacity for care would permit. It's a very important part of the statement, is as far as our resources and capacity for care will permit. We were not overcrowding animals. What we were trying to do was let folks know when we were hitting up against capacity. And the reason we do that is because in best practice in sheltering, if you are attempting to save healthy and treatable animals, you want to let the public know when you really need their help. Now, an open admission shelter, a lot of folks are not necessarily aware of what that means or what that is, a control facility and a sheltering facility, but that means that we have to take everything that comes through the door.
How many animals come into the shelter in the city of Chicago?
Well, in 2017, I believe it was roughly 14,000 animals coming through the door. Now, that's just about everything, John.
How many of those are adopted out then?
Well, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I will say thus far in 2018, I believe we've had over 500 dogs adopted out, not as many cats. Most of the cats are transferred out.
And how many of them are put down?
Not a lot.
Would you say more are you find homes for, or more of them do you have to euthanize?
I would say that this year we've been above 90% on our live release. Now, let me tell you what that means.
Live release.
So if you go online and you look at our statistics, which are posted monthly, because we want the community to know how many are coming in and how many are going out, how many are dying in care, how many are being euthanized, and how many are being euthanized at owner request. If you go online, you look at the outcomes in those data, you will see adoptions, you will see returns to owner, and you will see transfers. So you're going to take the total number of outcomes, get rid of those that came in dead. Obviously, they're not going to get any better as the day goes on. But then you're going to divide the number of adoptions, transfers, and return to owner by the total number of outcomes. And you're going to get what's called the live release rate. We do a modified live release rate, so we take out the number of animals that have been brought in by their owners to be euthanized, because Chicago Animal Care and Control does that for a very low fee.
Steve, what is your take on all of this?
Well, the beginning of the paragraph you read, you said something like terminally troubled or frequently troubled or
chronically troubled animal care and control.
They're not. So they were years ago. And one of the reasons why they're not chronically troubled anymore is this woman sitting right here. She changed the culture of animal care and control in Chicago in just over 2 years. So you're rattling off statistics. In essence, it means that more animals get out alive. And if the job description says that, Susan, you did your job. End of story.
Yeah, but the Tribune's also intimating that some of the dogs that were released live maybe should not have been. They cite a 58% increase in biting incidents.
And I'd like to address that as well. As I mentioned, animals come into the shelter. We don't know their backgrounds. We are assessing them as best we can with the resources that we have. And just this year alone, we had Safe Humane Chicago help us look at how we were evaluating dogs. So we were trying to do what is best practice, which is look at the animal when it comes into the shelter, understand what the owner is saying about the animal, understand what we've seen in the shelter, understand what our volunteers are saying, as well as our vets and our staff. And that is how we would gauge whether or no an animal was put on the adoption floor. Now, I will also say animals are animals. The executive director is going to try their darndest to ensure that the processes are in place to have adoptable animals on the floor, but an animal can be adopted from any shelter and come back with a bite. A bite being a break in the skin, circumstances varying for each, I'm sure. So I think it's really important to understand that in sheltering, if you are saving more animals, if you are attempting to get the animals out, you're going to have more people working with the animals, and you're going to have more exposure to the animals.
I just want to read one other sentence from the story, because this is what people are reading. It said that the city said that dogs were warehoused, stored in offices, and inhumane conditions. That there was a problem with the, it says, that exacerbated dangerous behavior, and multiple volunteers and staff members, including Russell, were bitten by dogs. So it sounds like you are trying to gin the numbers up to have as positive a ratio as you can. But in the process, it's bad for the dogs and it's bad for the people. This is what the city is saying.
Understood. And again, I'd like to look at the timing of that explanation as well. But I will say this, that is an absolute false statement that we were quote-unquote warehousing animals. When we would get to capacity, we would euthanize for space, and we let people know. So warehousing animals, it's not really a sheltering term per se. We would never put more than one animal to a kennel. The kennels were cleaned
that
daily.
That did not happen. We didn't have two dogs in a space that was made for one.
Only if they came in as a bonded pair, or if a mother and children came into the shelter. So I do want to address, however, this false impression that's being given of the shelter. We've had several people come into the shelter and talk about how clean it's been. And there's a reason for that. Back in July, we partnered with the Department of Family Support Services and their delegate agency. We have about 20 kennel attendants in the morning to clean all of the dog kennels. And I think people need to understand as well, how many kennels do we have at the shelter? We can hold 300 dogs. Do we want to be holding 300 dogs? Not necessarily. We want to keep those numbers lower. But I will say this, there's no canine influenza virus in that shelter right now, and there hasn't been since July. So saying it's chronically troubled, I think it's gotten vastly improved.
Well then, Steve, what do you think happened here? If She sounds genuine.
She is.
You have the interest of the animals at heart.
She does.
That's
and that's people.
The job. Absolutely, because people are ultimately going to care for these animals. So I guess, I don't know where the priority is, but maybe people first, make sure we get safe animals in the hands of people that want them. So then why do they let this lady go?
I think it's because she questioned the city on occasion. So even to do my, and Susan, forgive me saying this, but it's the truth, even to do my pet adoption segments with Steve Cochran in the morning, every now and again I'd have Animal Care and Control come in, and I'd have to wait, because Susan would say, city isn't telling me whether I have permission to do this.
To do what? To bring the animals to the studio?
Add a dog, an adoptable dog, to the studio. Eventually they would generally do it, but sometimes they wouldn't get back to her. And when they don't get back to Susan, Susan then would say, I'm going to do what's right for the animals. Not only with that specific circumstance, but in general, do what's right for the animals, even if City Hall gets questioned.
So was there a personnel issue? Did the mayor's staff and you not get along that well? Did you sense that maybe this was about more than just the dogs and cats?
Well, John, again, I think it's clear in the article. I was never given an explanation, and certainly the explanations that have come out subsequent could have been told to me at the time. They never were. I think what we saw was just a general lack of respect and dignity for that position, perhaps me personally as well. I think we had disagreements, perhaps, on how to run the shelter. I did believe in the mission of saving healthy and treatable animals. I think it's what the city expected. I think the city wanted to see less euthanasia of healthy animals, and that's what we aimed to do. We also aimed to help the public more by providing a valuable community resource.
Hold on. Less euthanasia of the animals. The city wanted to see that.
I think the public and the community, and I think it was very clearly expressed by many people, that killing healthy and treatable animals was not what this city was going to be doing or needed to be doing.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I'm confused. I mean, that's your mission, too. Mm-hmm. It, by the city, do you mean the city's government of Chicago?
I think the public, John. I want to be clear. I think the public had an expectation.
The public wants
our animal welfare
fewer animals to be euthanized.
Healthy and treatable animals.
Okay, but this maybe the pressure from the city itself, that is the city of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel's people, whoever they are down the line, they are less interested in that. They do not want too many animals or dangerous animals released. Their attitude is more, I'm sorry, but we have a painless way to end the lives of these dogs and cats. Let's do that.
Well, Susan,
let's do that
Susan,
more aggressively.
I don't want to speak for Susan, but I know for a fact she did when it was thought to be necessary to do that. And interestingly enough, the city actually told at least one alderman, we need to euthanize more animals. Well,
who is that?
What's that?
Who is that? Who is the alderman?
Alderman Nick Sposato.
Okay, hold on a second. Are you looking at the same lines I'm looking
Maybe.
At? Maybe. Alderman,
but it's true.
Nick Sposato's on the phone line. Hi, Alderman, you're on the air.
Hey, John. How you doing, buddy? Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure. So you've been listening to this conversation. What do you want to say?
I just want to say Susan was awesome. This is a travesty that she was fired. I don't know where they got their information from. I've seen the transformation over there. I'm guessing Susan could verify that I probably was there at the shelter more than maybe any alderman, but certainly more than most.
You were our most supportive, I'll tell you that.
So I was there a lot, and I saw everything that happened. It was just they just did awesome things there, and I saw the rally in support of her. On Tuesday night before the 4th of July, they had 500 people out there, so people are really upset about this, John, and the city's making a big mistake here. So,
well, Alderman, something doesn't make sense here. The most knowledgeable pet advocate in America is sitting to my right, Steve Dale.
Well, that's a bit much.
I don't think that it is. And then here's this person who's doing a great job. Say you and say Steve.
Oh, more than that. Say 450 or 500 people that were out there.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense that she would be terminated.
With the two-day notice on the day before the 4th of July. So.
Say it again?
I said there's the 500 people that were out there with a two-day notice the night before the 4th of July. So.
Well, then I got to make a phone call to the city, don't I? I mean, what are they going to tell me? Get in front of that. Either of you, somebody from the mayor's staff?
They're going to tell you. I mean, they're going to tell you she wasn't euthanizing enough animals, and her job was to save animals. So they're going to say, you know, they wanted more animals to be euthanized, and you know, Susan tried her best and her staff and her volunteers to save as many animals as possible.
Well, I'll tell you something, guys. I can be pretty agnostic about this. That is, I don't think that putting an animal down is a bad thing.
Well, what if there's no need to? And what if you can find a home for that animal?
Then find a home for that animal.
She did.
But evidently, the city disagrees with that. And I just don't think if the if that process also means that you are putting too many dogs in confined spaces.
But that was not happening.
I'm telling you what the city is telling me.
I understand.
Or if that process includes the possibility that dogs are going to homes that will bite the dogs or the people that already live there, then you're being too aggressive an advocate for the animals, and that should not be your job. Your job should be to do what's best for the city.
And John,
that's the city's position.
If I may address that as well, we certainly did put down dogs that were aggressive. And I want to be very clear. Dangerous dogs, I think, would be, is a legal term. Listen, you do a dangerous dog investigation. If an owner-owned animal goes out and bites another dog unrestrained and the circumstances are such that investigation needs to be done, then pursuant to the Municipal Code 7-12-050, there's going to be consequences. We were not releasing known dogs with human aggression behaviors or others. Dogs will be dogs, and I recognize that, you know, some folks disagree with this position, but everyone knows when they enter a shelter and they adopt an animal, no one can guarantee exactly what that dog will do when it leaves. And you also cannot guarantee the circumstances under which the dog will be kept when it leaves. So, for example, if you have a dog perfectly sweet in the shelter, was kept in a kennel, they have to be kept in kennels. You can't keep them out roaming around. That's just part of sheltering. Now, we can talk about institutionalization of animals as well, but we have to do something with them. Now, if indeed the dog leaves and that owner decides to walk the dog unrestrained outside while a child is riding a bike, it's not unusual for an animal to chase after a person on a bike and possibly bite. But
that's about
not the
owner.
But that's not the fault of the shelter.
Animal.
And the executive director cannot be a guarantor for the behavior of every animal that leaves the shelter. We advise people what to do when they adopt pets. If they're adopting a pet with another pet, we, of course, advise to keep them separate, bring them together. Sometimes they bring their pet into the shelter, and it's a good match. I think what we lose focus on when there's so much emphasis placed on this is the fact of the matter is most animals that leave go into happy homes and do very well. And we have to focus on that.
Stay right there. Susan Russell is in the studio along with our Steve Dale. Alderman, I'm going to let you go. Any last word before we hang up on you? I sure appreciate your calling in.
We just really appreciate Susan, all the good stuff she's done, and I know she'll continue to be an advocate for animals. So.
Alderman Nick Spezzato, thanks for calling in. We appreciate your time. Susan Russell is in our studio. She was the director of the Animal Care and Control Shelter in Chicago. Steve Dale is here, too, from WGN Radio, the pet expert. We're talking about Susan's dismissal from that position just, 2 weeks ago, right?
Well, it was actually a week and a couple days ago.
Week and a couple of days ago. And I guess this controversy is surrounding, you know, is the city too aggressively euthanizing pets or is the city too aggressively releasing to the care of other people and keeping the pets? What do we do about this animal population? That's the yin and yang of it, would you say, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, 14,000, 15,000 animals come in, and by law, Susan Russell or any municipal facility anywhere in the country, not only in Chicago, has to say, okay, we open our doors to you. So what do you do with all those animals? It's not the equation it was in your mother's animal sheltering era.
Why? What was the equation then?
Because I don't know your mother, but the equation right now is that rescues get involved, other shelters from not only Chicago, other communities.
Do you euthanize for space?
You need to, yeah.
And I think right now...
But the goal is not to.
The goal is not to. The goal is not to euthanize healthy and treatable animals. I want to emphasize that if you don't have to. Chicago Animal Care and Control did euthanize for space occasionally. But we tried to get the word out so that people had an opportunity. You have to be very transparent with your public if you're going to be euthanizing for space. And we definitely tried to do that. But I want to add as well, when you are keeping animals as we were keeping them, and it was not technically overcrowded, as people are saying. There was never more than one animal per kennel unless there was a bonded pair, a mother and children, mother and pups or kittens. But we had a lot of programs at the shelter to keep animals engaged. We partnered with Safe Humane Chicago, and they were instrumental in increasing our capacity of care over the last couple of years. Manners classes, play grouping. We had Dogs Playing for Life come in just there in June to enhance our ability to provide more enrichment for the dogs in the shelter. When you are committing to saving healthy and treatable animals, you do need to keep the animals enriched while they're there.
The dog that bit you.
Mm-hmm.
was put down, right?
It was.
If that dog had bit me, would that dog have also been put down?
Well, yes. If indeed you were in the position I was in and the circumstances were as such. Now, had you provoked that dog, if that dog, say you walked into that dog's house, John, and you were trying to steal that dog's TV, that would be a provoked bite. That's a little bit different. But as you know, we do put down dogs that have human aggression issues, and I'm sure the city shelter will continue to do so.
Our texts include, John, I already made my call this morning about Susan being fired. 311 took my call about it. John, ask Susan about Alderman Ray Lopez. Maybe he's behind her firing. Is he the thorn in your side on this story?
You know, it's interesting. Since I took this job back in May of 2016, not long after this particular alderman became a critic, a constant critic, and it really did not stop. And quite frankly, I didn't see the point of it all. It seemed not to help any of the animals in the shelter. He didn't come down to the shelter.
Do you know, did he exacerbate this? Was he involved in your dismissal?
You know, I don't know. I honestly don't know. What I can say is that I think over the last 2 years and 2 months, calling for my resignation pretty much nonstop, I think he set the stage for people to question the good work that we were doing at the shelter.
The next text, John, the animal rescues in Chicago love Susan, and they're the ones that work with the shelter the most.
True.
And well, that is true. That is true. When you actually are at the shelter, which, that particular alderman, I really never saw him at the shelter, but when you are actually at the shelter, you see the progress that the community was making. It was quite something, and it will remain quite something.
We're out of time. Susan, good luck to you.
Thank you.
I know you told me off the air, Steve probably knows this as well, while you're no longer the director, you said your commitment is still going to be to help animals in Chicago. We'll reach out to the city and see if they want to tell us their side of the story, but something here doesn't fit.
It's a shame. It's not necessary. And you know what? Companion animals really do matter, Mayor. He can't hear me now. He's off in China or somewhere.
We'll send him the podcast.
Please.
Susan,
and if I could, I just want to encourage the city. Please support your local shelter. Support Animal Care and Control. Get down there, adopt, foster, volunteer, and promote those animals.
Thanks for coming in, Susan Russell.
Thank you.
Steve Dale, you the same.
Me.
Thank you, King John.
Steve, what do you think of not telling the families whose kids have been rescued and whose have not been rescued and are still in the cave? They're not telling them. I'm not critical. I'm just trying to get my head around that.
I didn't realize that. So there are some children who were rescued today and their parents don't know it?
My understanding is none of the children. Now, that's hard to believe, though,
because I've seen
their pictures on TV. But they said that they are certainly endeavoring not to tell all of the families whose kids have been released.
Well, I would think that reunifying the families would be
paramount.
Done pretty quickly.
My thought on the strategy would be that it gives all of them hope. It doesn't create any division. It's like, why did you rescue that kid but not my kid?
I mean, it's going to be found out.
But you have to, at some point, say, okay, you're coming now and you're not.
Well, maybe they're not telling them which kid is going to go out next.
Yeah. I mean, because really, maybe then, right, if your kids are still in there, you are starting to bring pressure on them to make sure your kid is the next one that comes out. And this is complicated enough as it is. We don't need advocacy groups trying to lobby one kid for the other, but somebody's going to be last. That'll probably be the coach.
Well, it will probably be the coach. And I mean, I'm sure you would want your child out as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Today's mission was more efficient than yesterday's.
Sounds like it.
You could argue that the later you go, the safer it might be, too.
Eight kids are out? Is that still what we're at? Eight people?
There are
five still in?
Five still in, including the coach.
Yeah,
so
right.
Four players and the coach.
Yeah, I'm counting 13. 12 right. Kids, the coach. So eight out, five in, which, oh my gosh, that's great.
It's remarkable.
But it's also terrible to think five of them are still sitting there waiting their turn. You know, we talked last week to Anmar Mirza, who is the national coordinator at the National Cave Rescue Commission. He was visiting with us on Friday in Indiana as he was about to go back into a cave. We found him again today, but I'm not sure where you are now. Anmar, this is John Williams. You're on WGN. Where are you today?
I'm in Bloomington, Indiana, at work.
Is that where you guys are headquartered, or is that a professional organization that you're involved in? What is that?
So the National Cave Rescue Commission is a commission of the National Speleological Society. Our mission is to provide training and resource coordination for cave rescue across the United States. It's a nonprofit organization, and it's all volunteers. We don't have a paid staff. Now, most of our people who are instructors and coordinators are people who are in charge of cave rescue in their particular areas. I help coordinate cave rescues in the southern Indiana area, and so we're a fairly diverse group of people.
What do you make of where the story is today? How optimistic are you? Where is your head right now?
I'm incredibly optimistic compared to what I was on Friday when we talked. Yeah. The fact that they've been able to get eight of them out, and it is getting more efficient, is a positive sign. We're still at the mercy of the weather. We still have five in there, and if the weather worsens, I fear that there may be a lot more pressure to try and do something that isn't as practiced and polished as they have it at this point. But I'm not going to say it's a guarantee that everyone's going to get out and safe, but I think that the odds are much better than they were.
If they've been able to get one kid and then another kid came 10 minutes later, why aren't they all just in a row? Do you have any idea of what the delay is for?
Well, there's actually several reasons for that. One is if there is a problem in one of the confined spaces, you got to remember these places, some of the places through there are so tight that you have to take the equipment off and squeeze through. If there's a problem in there, you don't want to have everybody committed in there. So they're sending them through those particular areas one at a time. So if there is a problem, they can deal with that problem.
Do you think there's a drop dead point? I hate the way that sounded, but you know what I mean? That with the rain and the rising water, are we approaching a point where no rescue at all is going to be possible?
I don't think that is the case. I think they actually have enough time to complete the mission. The problem is that if the rain hits and the water rises up enough, the mission now becomes much more dangerous than it was before. But I think it's still excellent chances. What a lot of people don't understand is that the reason that they're taking these gaps in between the getting the kids out, and they're doing them, the four at a time now, is that in order to get enough scuba tanks and air in there into the cave, they have to ferry them in. And they've got over 90 divers who are helping move equipment into the cave just so that the 18 who are actually doing the rescue can do the rescue. I mean, that's just an enormous amount of people who are trying to provide equipment in there. And it takes time because only one diver can go through those constrictions at a time.
This texter said, hey, John, they don't tell them until after they are rescued. So what they're not telling the families is who is going to be next. And I suppose that's a prudent decision on their part. You just talked about the number of people in the system. Do we know how many people are actually staying in that area with the kids, the coach, and say the remaining four young men? Is there a professional? I know that a doctor and a nurse went in. I wonder how many people are there with them at all times.
I know that there's at least four with them at all times, and for many of the times, there's actually more than that. But that fluctuates as the mission is going on.
Boy, that's got to make the kids feel a little bit better just to know that they're not alone and that people are working for them. I would imagine, though, the idea for any of us, I swim all the time. I love to swim underwater. I have never used scuba gear, and I think it's a mental thing to say, I'm going to put my head underwater. And now I'm going to breathe. Even though I know I've got a mask on and there's air coming in, that first breath just must be terrifying. And even the second breath. And then to say now wade through the darkness, it would seem to me like temperamentally some people might actually find that impossible to do. Do you know what I mean?
Well, keep in mind, too, they had 4, 5, 6 days now with some of these kids to drill and to practice. So, yeah, I mean, if you just stuck a mask on somebody who'd never done it before and threw them in the water, it's a real problem. But if you ease them into it gradually and you drill with them and practice with them, not only are you teaching them how to use the equipment, but you're teaching them to trust you as the rescuer. And that bond, that trust, is critically important in these kind of operations.
John, this texter said, about the kids getting out of the cave, have you heard any reporting that questions why the coach took the kids there in the first place, if the kids gave permission, if the kids know how to cave hike, if they knew the monsoon season was coming, It was a birthday for a couple of the kids. They thought it would be a fun thing to do after one of their practices or games. I know they weren't poaching. They were there legally. But obviously, somebody should have closed the cave entrance or not let them in there at all. Don't you think, Anmar?
Well, that's actually a social question, and it's a different culture over there. The cave is closed during the monsoon season, but the monsoon season hadn't started. The official start of the monsoon season hadn't started yet.
Dave's on line one. You're on WGN. Dave, what can we do for you?
Yes, my question is, why has not our acting president said anything about this? He says so much about other miscellaneous things in his year and a half. Why not about this, or why not send help? We've heard nothing in the news that we've sent anybody there to help out the situation.
Thanks for the call. The president did tweet about it over the weekend. He couldn't resist, and he said that America is helping and that these people are very brave. It does sound like an international community is there, but I guess, Anmar, at some point, you don't need more bodies, right? I mean, if we had 1,000 people there, that's not going to make it 1,000 times better.
Exactly. Actually, the more people you have there, the worse the problem can be because you increase the logistical support. But to the caller, the U.S. military Pacific Command actually did send personnel and equipment over there to support the operation. So we are over there and supporting. There are at least two American cave divers over there right now who are assisting with it, who on their own went over and are assisting with it. But it's they don't need extra people at this point. They have what they need. What they need is time and for the weather to cooperate.
Did you see that little tube that Elon Musk is sending over?
Yeah.
Well, are you optimistic about that? He said it would take 17 hours to get there. He said that several hours ago. It looks like a torpedo. You can put a person in there. It's specifically designed for rescue operations. Oxygen would be in there. The idea is you'd put the kid in there and drag him through. What do you make of that?
I have a large amount of respect for Mr. Musk. I've been a fan of SpaceX for many years now. But quite frankly, I wish he would stop talking about how to perform a cave rescue in an area of expertise he has no knowledge about whatsoever. If he wished to support the operation and send specialists over there and, you know, and financing for it, great. But the idea of using a tube, an escape pod or anything like that simply will not work in this particular environment. And you have some of the most skilled and highly qualified cave divers in the world over there, people who build their own equipment specifically for this activity, who know how to do this. And if they needed something and called out and said, hey, we need this, if Mr. Musk would say, hey, I've got this, I can provide it, that'd be great. But for him to say, this is how you should do the operation, is quite frankly, it's irresponsible.
Karen, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi. You know, fingers crossed, prayers, et cetera, that, you know, this comes to successful completion. I had heard earlier that the reason, you know, and they didn't share who was coming, but the need was to get the stronger of the children out first, just to see if the mission could be done.
Right.
And then also it verified that they were going to need to hold back this last four because physically and or mentally they are not ready, and the couple more days gives them that opportunity. So can you help share light on that, please?
Well, your reasoning is actually, in both cases, is actually very sound. My problem is that I've now heard conflicting reports, including from credible sources, that I've heard both that the stronger ones came out first, and I've heard that both the weaker ones have come out first. So I'm at a hesitant to make a comment on what their decision-making process was. I will say that I do trust the people who are there who are making those decisions,
right.
And that they would have made the best decision that they could given the information they have. I don't have that information, so I don't feel comfortable commenting on it.
Yeah, I get that. And maybe it's sometimes they're strong, sometimes they're weak. The reporting I heard, for what it's worth, was that the stronger kids came through first, and the logic was, let's see if it can be done at all. If a weak child perished, you might have thought a stronger one could make it. If a strong one made it, at least you'd know that it could be done. But you hate the idea then that the weakest kids are languishing back. You would want to get them in the pipeline as soon as possible. But I also believe that they're trying to feed and build up the strength or even courage of these kids to get them to go. At some point, they have to get in the water. Any last comments from you, Anmar? I've got to take a break. I'll call you again tomorrow if you don't mind, but anything else you want to drop in our ears here?
Well, I'd just like to remind people out there, you know, I, as a highly experienced cave rescue specialist, I don't second-guess the judgment of the people who are there, and I ask that the public out there not do that as well. It's not fair to the rescuers, and it puts increased pressure on them to potentially take actions that may be detrimental. So sit back, trust the fact that these are the best people who are doing it with the best information that they have.
8 is the number, if you're wondering, just tuning in now. 8 of the 13 out, 4 boys still in there with the coach. And we have not heard of late when the next ones they think will emerge. There's been a gap now, so we'll just continue to follow the story. And Anmar Mirza is the national coordinator at the National Cave Rescue Commission. He's in Indiana. We'll call you again later this week. Thanks for your time again, Anmar.
You're welcome.
Here's some good news. The Dow's doing pretty well today. Market's about ready to close. Last I saw, it was up, was it about 300 points? LF, where's the Dow, please?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 318.49 points at 24,774.97 points.
I'm going to ask that again because I don't think I understood the answer. Hey, LF, where's the Dow, please?
The Dow Jones' industrial average is up 318.49 points at 24,774.97 points, John.
Up 318. Up 318.
The Dow is up 1.3%.
I'll take that. All right, that's good news. Literally, now I'm thinking, okay, did another kid come out yet? Did another kid come out yet? Those kids have got to start coming out. We'll keep you posted. By the way, we're sitting in the Skyview Studio, the Allstate Skyview Studio.
Skyline, if you want to get technical about it.
It's Sky something. We're up in the sky. We're in the studio. But Rokan is about to inaugurate the new studio on the other corner of this skyscraper building. He'll be looking out onto Lake Michigan and the Ferris wheel at Navy Pier. And they'll, I guess, be looking in on him. We'll catch up in a minute on WGN. Hey, Ro, how are you?
Oh, do I sound better? Do I sound younger?
And I didn't say Anna because I didn't know if you were in there.
I'm
Hi,
here.
Anna.
Hi, John. We sound great.
You do. You guys sound like you're standing right here next to me, but I don't have eyeballs on you guys.
But we're like 10 yards away.
Can you see me?
It's very strange.
I'm going to say it's 20 yards. It's like 20 yards, yeah. but the Bears always make 10 yards seem like 20 yards, so true. That's a Chicago kind of thing to do.
I can see Kevin, I can see Violetta, but I can't see you guys. I can see Judy, and I can... It
you
sounds
sound
like Romper Room.
Romper Room, and they never said Anna in the history of me watching
oh,
it.
Oh, come
so
on.
You just brought back a very painful memory.
What?
No, they said Anne, they never said Anna.
Oh, you think
ever.
They were saying Roe? Do you think ever
no,
once?
I'm sure you didn't get a shout-out, but
Mrs.
there was no expectation of that.
I see
what
Violetta,
was
I see
no, they never said Violetta.
Try finding Violet on one of those keychains.
Or yeah. The Coke cans. Does that appear on a can of Coke?
I saw Violet, so I'll take it.
Yeah. Or on the license plates and the spin around thing
yeah.
at the truck stops?
Yeah. Yeah. Vacationing must have been
just
very hard.
I got to keep looking.
Judy's everywhere, just so you know.
Ro, are you going to handicap the Supreme Court pick tonight?
I have. You know what? I'm going to give you an upset.
You're going to go with the lady, the Chicago gal?
Okay. Since you're pushing me to it, yes. I am going with her, and I have
such a homer.
I wasn't even thinking that this was possible, but mm-hmm. I have a very specific theory as to why, and I have some data to back it up.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we could get some kind of advance word during the show. It's possible it could leak. It's not supposed to officially be announced by the president till 8 o'clock our time, 9 o'clock Eastern time. But you never know. And it's really hard to keep these things secret sometimes because you have to move people around and have that person in position. And sometimes
that's right.
You find out.
Go to the airport. The one with the getting in a plane.
That is my little piece of data.
Ooh. Okay, then that's fascinating.
I'm anxious to
hear that.
I got a little birdie. Let's put it this way.
Mm-hmm.
They were shutting off and quickly moving a dignitary from the south to the north to an airport in Chicago.
Don't give it all
night.
Away
in
now.
Chicago. Well, okay, but you know what they do? I mean, if you're doing a game show, if you're doing a primetime sort of reality thing,
yeah.
And that's what this feels like,
yeah.
You bring all four of them there.
Well, with Garland.
It's like the NFL draft.
I mean, with Gorsuch, not Garland. Of course, we know what happened with Garland. With Gorsuch, they did. They secretly moved him through Colorado, through the back roads, and had a military jet waiting there for him. But then they also had this Hardiman guy, who was one of the four, who moved to Washington.
Right.
And it seemed like, was he the decoy? Was he still in consideration? Because this president wasn't sure.
I put Omarosa on a plane, too, just to keep people guessing.
Why not? Judge
put
Judy?
Put her on a plane and then break the engine. Okay?
I think the other big story of the day is, along those lines, there's a lot of other things we want to get to here. Royal Oaks from ABC News is going to join us, talk about what the Supreme Court actually means. But the other, I think, big story was the shot back across the bow from Michael Cohen today,
mm-hmm.
where he said to Rudy Giuliani, the truth is not on your or your client's side. And his client, Rudy Giuliani's client.
Yeah, who's that?
Is Michael Cohen's ex-client, Donald Trump. So that's a shot right there.
Yeah, are you surprised if Cohen breaks? Are you surprised?
No.
I thought he was going to be so true to the Donald forever.
These guys are bullies. They were all bullies. Did you notice all the guys at Manafort, Cohen, all those guys? We know that they were the toughest guys in the room all the time. And I have never met true heroes. Who are the toughest guys in the room.
Or who are bullies.
Yeah, right.
Or are bullies, right? Heroes have an ability to be both soft and hard mm-hmm. at the same time. Hard when they need to be, but, and these guys were, hard just for the sake of being hard. And I think that's going to come back to bite them.
Have a good show in your pretty new studio.
Thank you. It's going well so far as one can tell.